Welcome to the Atlas Airguns podcast. On this episode, we talk to Mike Bricker, also known as Centercut on the forums. If you like competitive shooting, then this episode is definitely for you. We discuss the last couple of years in the airgun industry and how extreme field target is an emerging event in shooting sports. Get to know more about Mike and his aptly named Team Centercut.
Sorry about that. I'm not Mr. Compute. I'm 63 years old, damn it.
Well, you get to have fun hunting and competing and stuff like that, so that's better.
Hey, I did have one of my first computer was a 8088 XT. And I remember when I bought a 20 meg hard drive and it cost $400.
So what year did you originally get internet?
I used the bulletin boards at first, probably in the early 90s, you know, where you dialed up and eek, that stuff. Yeah. But all I use it for now, if I mean, because phones do so much, all I really do is use my, I use my computer for work, but I'm not allowed to do this stuff on my work computer or else it would have worked just fine. Because I work over at Navy Special Warfare Command, and we plug anything into our computer, it sets off alarms and, you're getting deep shit.
Well, obviously we're already recording, so how about we do some introduction on who you are and how you got into air guns and I guess where you are now.
Sure. My name is Mike Bricker. I live in San Diego, California. I've lived here since 2005. Before that, I lived for 5 years in Hawaii. I moved to San Diego from Hawaii after I retired from the Navy. I was I was active duty for 27 years, mostly on submarines. I started off enlisted, made it up to senior chief, which is an E-8. I think it's the same thing as a Master Gunnery Sergeant or something in the Marine Corps or the Army. I'm not sure. And then I got commissioned after I had about 13, 14 years in, and I retired as a Lieutenant Commander. And then for the last 15 years, I worked here in San Diego. I work at the Navy Special Warfare Command, so the Navy SEAL headquarters. And I'm the chief engineer for all our undersea programs that we deal with the submarine force. So our little submarines that we have that deliver SEALs in and out, infill, exfil, denied areas, and things like that. So I have nothing to do with the operations. I'm the engineer behind that. So the equipment, the people, the money, the facilities, all that kind of stuff. But nothing to do with, being 3,000 miles from home and a couple hundred feet under the water off the coast of someplace you're not supposed to be. I have nothing to do with that.
So do you ever hear anything that's weird outside of the submarine while you're underwater? And I'm not talking about with like headphones or anything like that, but with your own ears.
No, it's quiet. It's really quiet. I mean, when you're in the submarine, you don't hear anything. The sonar techs that are listening to the hydrophones on the ship, we'll hear things from the outside, but you don't. So when you're back in the engine room, obviously it's loud. You're making power. You got a nuclear power plant that goes steam going through pipes, going through turbines, gears, generators, pumps, all that kind of stuff. But when you go up forward, up where there's no engineering spaces and all the electronics and the crew's mess and the control where you operate the ship from and everything, it's really quiet. And so you don't hear any of that stuff. And in fact, when you're underway and after you dive the boat, you get underway on the surface, you get to a certain point where it's water's deep enough to dive the submarine, you dive it, you go to a certain depth. And then if they didn't go up and down, you wouldn't even know you weren't parked next to the pier.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So what got you into air guns?
It's a funny story. In 2017, my brother-in-law lives in Greensboro, North Carolina, and we were back in Greensboro, my wife and I, visiting her sister, her second oldest sister. She's the oldest. And John had a squirrel problem in his backyard. He likes birds. He has bird feeders everywhere. But I think on the squirrel net, got sent out throughout the neighborhood and adjoining neighborhoods that, hey, there's a guy that puts black sunflower seeds and he has feeders all over his backyard. So they were coming in like crazy. And we were looking at YouTube and we saw this video of a guy named Ted, who doesn't know Ted, that was the one I saw, the one I remember, he was shooting in the winter. He had white clothes on. It was all snowy, and he was shooting squirrels out of the trees with his Ed gun. And we looked at it, so we did a little research and came up with a Marauder 25. We bought one. It was delivered the next day, and so that's how we started. We started schwacking squirrels in his backyard. And then as soon as I got home to San Diego, I bought a gun. I looked on Air Guns of Arizona, and I bought, it was down to two guns. It was down to a 22 FX Wildcat. They just came out with those, or a 22 Daystate Renegade. And the only reason I bought one over the other, I bought the Renegade. They were about the same price, but the Renegade had a free pair of Hawk Frontier, very nice binoculars that came with it if you bought the gun at the time. So that's why I started out with the Renegade. And for the first year and a half or so, I just hunted. I had nothing to do with competing, nothing to do with shooting targets. The only targets I shot were enough to sight the gun in. So I had that gun. About 6 months later, I bought a used FX Bobcat Mark II 30 caliber. And those are the only two guns I had for the first year and a half or more. And then I kind of noticed all these extreme bench rest competitions, and I didn't know a lot about 25-meter bench rest or 50-yard or field target or all that kind of stuff. I just looked at this extreme bench rest because on Air Gun Nation, that was what was promoted more than anything else. And I said, well, I got a 30 cal Bobcat, and I've been hitting squirrels at 100 yards. How hard can it be? I'm sure a lot of guys have said that. And when I went in 2018 to EBR, and I found out it wasn't as easy as it looked. So that's how I got into air guns.
And you still obviously hunt down there in San Diego?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I mean, that's, if I had to choose between going to competitions and hunting, I would skip competitions. Hunting, we hunt for ground squirrels, rabbits. We just got, not a job, but a request in out in east of San Diego, past Descanso and Alpine. A couple of people that I know people that have problems with coyotes. They have problems with a feedlot that's having problems with raccoons. So we go out and do stuff like that. So the hunting is what gets your heart going. It's just a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong, competing is fun. And, you know, when you're sitting there at 100 yards and you got 20 other guys in the row or 40 guys in the row and you're shooting pro and everybody good and it's windy, I'm sure anybody will tell you, pulling that trigger on that first shot is really hard and it gets the heart going pretty good.
So did you hunt prior to air guns as well?
No, not in my adult life. I did when I was a kid. I shot, the pump up, Crossman 760. And I just hunted the same thing, mostly birds and squirrels and stuff like that. If I'd have had a gun as accurate as the ones that we have now, there wouldn't have been any wildlife at all in my neighborhood. But, so I've shot my whole life, and I was into shooting pistols and things like that when I lived in Charleston, South Carolina. I have a couple of guns, and it used to be easy to buy a handgun. You go into the store, you show them your driver's license, and you walk out 15 minutes later. And so I bought a Glock. I bought a Colt Combat Commander, a Glock 19 when they first came out, a Desert Eagle 44 Magnum, some other guns. And we shot every single week for a couple of years. But I never shot competition or speed or IPSC or anything like that. All we did was go out into the national forest and set cans and stuff up and have a blast doing that.
So you briefly mentioned EBR in 2018. Can you elaborate on what that was like being a beginner there and that experience?
Sure. Yeah. I researched it. I got into it. I made sure that I shot the Bobcat, the first gun that I had bought, second gun, actually 30 cal. And I signed up for the 100 yard, and I signed up for the speed silhouette, and I signed up for the field target. They called it extreme field target. I think he called it at the time American field target. It's like the extreme field target that we're developing right now with the GP series and everything. And we can get into that later. But I I had a couple of guns. I decided to just go with what I had. And surprisingly enough, I made the finals. I shot sportsman's class, and which is what most guys do their first year or two. And you look at all the big names that have won and stuff like that, they shot sportsman their first year or two. And so I figured that was pretty good because I knew I wasn't a pro. I wasn't even good enough to compete with that, not even close. And so I shot sportsman's class, and I made the finals in 100 yard, and I made the finals in the speed silhouette. And the 100 yard, I think I came in second to last in the finals, although I did make the finals, so I came in second to last. And in the speed silhouette, I made the finals, and I shot the wrong targets in the finals. I shot the targets in the lane of the guy next to me, which I helped them win, I think. But yeah, that wasn't that much fun. So I decided I have this kind of personality where I don't like doing anything if I'm not going to be good at it. And so after that, for the next year, I really decided I was going to practice and I was going to get better. And then so in 2019, I shot at RMAC. Didn't really do that good. All that practice didn't pay off. I didn't do that great. At the 100 yard, the second qual round, my gun broke, so I had problems there. And then all summer, I probably shot, I would say 10 hours a week, all summer long until EBR. Went to EBR, and I won at 100 yards in a sportsman, and I won in a speed silhouette. So it was a lot of fun. And then the guy that does the announcements at the award ceremony, what he says after that is, "Welcome to the pro division," which is a little bit different than shooting in sportsman.
You mentioned in the beginning of this podcast your decision process when it came to purchasing a rifle, and you mentioned two rifles, FX and Daystate. And obviously, we're both aware of the partisanship. We've previously talked before recording, and we are of like mind when it comes to that decision process. It's really one that's made on merit. What's the best gun for that competition or for that shooter? And I wanted to ask, how do you stay focused as a competitor on competing and growing the sport versus going into the weeds of partisanship? Because we often see that on the periphery, at least outside of competitions.
Yeah, I don't buy into all that. I shoot the gun that I think is going to help me to win. I wouldn't care if it was an Ed gun or a Cricket, Vulcan, FX, Daystate. It doesn't really matter. Whichever I have the best luck with, I'm not luck, but the best results with, that's the gun that I'm going to shoot. Some of the guys think that, well, we can go into team center cut, and what happened was this dovetails into the partisan, non-partisan, stuff like that with the guns. Right after I won in 2019 at EBR, a week or two after, I got called up and said, "Hey, would you like to join the Wolfpack," which is the Daystate team. But you have to shoot a Daystate gun. Now, I do have Daystate guns. I'm going to be shooting a Daystate Delta Wolf 25 in every event at RMAC this year. But that's the one I think gives me the best chance to win. So I said, no, I'm not interested. I want to shoot whatever I want to shoot. And this was the owner of AOA, Robert Buchanan. We've since become pretty good friends. And before he was going to hang up, I said, well, hold on a second. I said, Daystate has a team, and FX through Utah Air Guns kind of has a team. A lot of guys shoot those good guns also. And I said, how about AOA, which you don't have a shooting team, Air Guns of Arizona, how about you sponsor a team yourself? And you call it Team Center Cut. And the Center Cut came from when I used to play a lot of golf. Wasn't that great, but I was a really good short game. I get within 100 yards of the green, and my putting was really good. So the slogan was, when I would putt, oh, that's center cut, which means in the middle of the hole. And that's where that comes from. It has absolutely nothing to do with shooting. It was from golf, when I used to play a lot of golf. And he said, okay. And I said, well, here's what I'm thinking. You sponsor us, you know, just really travel place to stay when we shoot and stuff like that. We don't want free guns and all that kind of stuff. I said, if we earn it, you can work on that. But right now, just sponsor us with the uniforms. And then when we go to EBR or RMAC or something like that, AOA pays for an Airbnb, usually a big 6 or 7 bedroom house for us to stay in. And he said, that's fine. And I had one of the prizes from winning EBR that year. I won a brand new Daystate Red Wolf High Power 22. It's the one I call Blue on Air Gun Nation. And so I won that gun. And it turns out that out of the team center cut now, we started off just me and Derek Wall, ZX-10 Wall on Air Gun Nation. And then Bill Miller from Texas, so two guys from Texas. And then we just added more guys. We have 10 guys right now. Nine guys, one girl. And most of them shoot FX, I'll be honest. Derek shoots a Vulcan and a Cricket. One guy shoots a Thomas HPX 22 high power. But most of the other guys shoot FX. I shoot Daystate, usually. I've shot FX, in fact, shooting Extreme Field Target in Arizona, which is the thing that Ben Spencer set up, and it's really starting to grow, Extreme Field Target. In November, I won with a different, same model, but different FX Bobcat Mark II, 30 cal. So, you know, I'm going to shoot whatever, and that's the gun at the time when I was sitting on a buck and sticks. That's the gun that I was shooting best and hitting the most amount of KZs, kill zones, and knocking targets down in practice. So that's what I used. But I'm going to use whatever I think is going to give me the chance to win. It's not all about winning. It's really about having fun. But honestly, winning feels pretty good, and, yeah. And everybody likes to win, right?
So tell me a little more about this shooting team that you guys have. I see you guys all throughout the United States, and I'm sure that Air Guns of Arizona is very happy that you're representing them, because you guys are cleaning house in a lot of places across the United States, and you're doing very well. And I literally see you guys all over social media. So can you tell me a little more about that team?
Yeah, we, like I said, we started after EBR 2020, or 2019, excuse me, we'd have one in 2020. And so we kind of got together, and then it was just 4 or 5 of us initially, I think 5. And then COVID happened, and there wasn't much shooting going on at all in 2020. So we formed this team. We got all these shirts. AOA gave us all this money to buy the shirts and the hats and all that kind of stuff. And then we didn't have anywhere to shoot. So over the year and a half, last 2 years, so it's a little over 2 years now, we added some people to the team. And I looked for people to join the team that would be good representatives of the brand of AOA. Now, the fact that most of them can shoot really well, that's more of a side thing than anything else. You know, you think, oh, it would be awesome if Team Center Cut was standing on the podium first, second, and third in this tournament. That's going to last 5 minutes. But when you go and you represent the brand, and now, because all the guys that are on Team Center Cut are pretty much friends with the guys in the Wolfpack for Daystate, the guys on Utah Air Guns, when we walk in somewhere, people know, they recognize the black and the orange. People know who we are. They're not going to go, oh, look, there's Team Center Cut. They're going to come kick our ass in this tournament. That's just not true. I mean, we're a smaller team. We have shooters that are as good as the shooters on the Wolfpack or Utah Air FX, but we don't have the depth. You know, we don't have a bench. We just got 10 people, 9 to 10 people, and all of them gradually came on the. As I noticed people that I thought would be good additions to Team Center Cut, I asked them to join the team. And the last one was Pekan Barami. If you look on EBR's results over the last 5 years, he's right up there at the top every time. And at EBR this last year, I was talking to Robert Buchanan, and he said, why don't you go ask Pekan to join the team? And I thought for a second, I went up and talked to him because I know him, but I wasn't really good friends with him yet. And I talked to him and I said, hey, have you ever thought about joining a team? And he said, I don't want to because they're too partisan. I don't want to join the FX team with Utah, and I don't want to join the Daystate team with the Wolfpack. And I said, no, how about our team, Team Seneca? And I was wearing the colors. And he said, are you sure that it's okay to shoot whatever gun we want? And I said, that was the major stipulation when we started the team, that we could shoot whatever gun we wanted, but we would just be a good ambassador of the brand of Air Guns of Arizona. So don't do anything stupid when we're shooting. Don't get in arguments, you know, just be nice. And if it's time not to be nice, just walk away. So that's kind of the way that started. And Pacon's is an awesome shooter. Derek Wall is just unbelievable. I mean, that guy wins everything. In fact, so I'm flying out next month to shoot in the Techstream Grand Prix event in Waco, near Waco, in Clifton, Texas. Derek trying to talk me into coming out, and I had an older Southwest airline ticket that I needed to use anyway, so I'm going to fly out for that.
So do you do any mentoring inside of your team? Because I know that you're running it and you have a good amount of members now. So do you do any mentoring? And if so, what kind?
I kind of am more, I would say, more like the coach than anything else. I do, actually. My last two before Pacon were a couple named Tony and Barb. Tony and Barb. And they, I met them through hunting, through another guy, Jerry, that knew Tony, that had met through Air Gun Nation. And Tony's a retired San Diego police officer, and his wife is a retired Southwest Airlines employee. So they have a lot of time. And I kind of took Tony under my wing as far as shooting and how to shoot air guns compared to shooting. Obviously, he knew how to shoot because he was a police officer, but how to shoot air guns and how to work on air guns. And now he's a very good air gun mechanic. It's been a year and a half with him. And so this last summer, his wife started getting involved also, Barb. And Barb and Tony Pellegrino. And Barb is a natural. Barb is probably better than either of us, and she's only been shooting 6 to 8 months, not even a year. It's not sexist, but I found that women that haven't shot before take direction much better than men that think they know everything. And so she sat down. She'd only been shooting maybe 2 or 3 months, and we were shooting at a KYL target, and the small one was 3/8 of an inch, either 1/4 or 3/8, 50 yards off of bench and bucket and sticks, and she was hitting it 4 out of 5 times. And I looked over, I said, Barb, that's unbelievable. She says, oh, well, you can do that. And I looked at Tony and I said, can you do that? He goes, I don't think so. I said, I don't think I can do it either. Later on, after they had shot for a while, I said, what do you guys think about being part of Team Center Cut? And they joined Team Center Cut also, and then Pacon shortly after that. And that brought us up to 10. And Robert looked at me and he said, I'm not paying for two houses when you guys travel. So we're going to limit it to 10 people for now.
Yeah, I met Pacon at the last EBR briefly, and he's a super nice guy, and he knows what he's talking about.
He's an awesome guy and a great shot. He's an airline pilot.
Yeah, kind of like John Bagakis, he's one of those shooters that I can tell is being very intentional about what he's doing on the field. So segueing here, one of the questions that I had for you is, do you do any shooting with any family members or anything like that?
No, I tried to talk my wife into it, but she didn't want to. So just my brother-in-law, John, out in North Carolina, that's about it.
So can you describe to the audience what exactly is going on with these new events that are popping up all throughout the United States? I know that you guys are supporting it and advocating for it quite a bit, and it's essentially extreme field target events. Can you describe what those events are and how it started?
Yeah, it started, there were two things, two different separate things that brought this together in my mind. And one of them was there was no EBR in 2020. So I decided that I was going to do my own EBR. I was like, damn it. I want to go shoot and I'm going to start a tournament. And I was originally going to do it, try to do it here in San Diego or up in Temecula where we shoot at a guy's place, LD, that has his own range at his place. But he's an older guy and was really concerned about COVID, which I could fully understand because he's in his mid to late 77, 78 years old. And so I was talking to Derek Wall, lives near Houston, Texas, and he said, hey, there's a guy, Ron Robinson, that has a bench rest silhouette match once a month, and he has a nice range at his house. Maybe he'd be interested. So I called up Ron, and we worked it out to have this Techstreme Bench Rest Championship. And we had, I think there were 16 shooters that came, some really good shooters. Bobby Corcoran came, who's one of the best shooters I know. Derek came. Some of the guys from Team Center Cut, all of them, Steve Montgomery, a few other guys. So we had that. So I kind of knew that we could put on a tournament. Concurrently with that, Ben Spencer had started this extreme field target thing. He calls it the XFT in Arizona. And we do it at the Phoenix Rod and Gun Club. And so it's like regular field target, except it's 25 to 100 yards. You can use high-power rifles up to 100 foot-pounds, slugs, pellets, doesn't matter. And we had the first big one in September of 2020. And I actually won the slug division of that one. And Steve Montgomery, another Team Center Cut guy, won the pellet division with the rifle that he borrowed from Bobby Corcoran, which was pretty ironic. And but then Ben started having these in the wintertime through the late spring every month. So that went on for about a year. And then last summer, I had heard talk of let's do a GP series and let's get other people involved. Well, Ron Robinson, the place, the guy that had the Techstreme bench rest, decided he was going to do Techstreme field target also. And then Wayne Burns up in Oregon, the Ashland, Oregon, decided that he wanted to do it. And David Stevenson out in Utah decided he wanted to do it also. So this first year, we have four clubs that are doing it. Next year, there'll probably be at least six, maybe even eight. But what we did was put together a Grand Prix series where what you do is you can shoot one, you can shoot four if you want. It doesn't matter, but you earn points towards the final at EBR. So if you ever shot EBR, you know that the very first day they have the Extreme Field Target event, probably the most popular event, that one or the Speed Silhouette. But that is going to be the final event for the GP series. So you will earn points at the different events throughout the year. Right now there's only four, and you will carry those points forward to Extreme Field Target at EBR, and those points will get added on to your score at Extreme Field Target at EBR to crown a national Extreme Field Target champion. We'll still have the Extreme Field Target event, just like we always do. There'll be a winner in the sniper class, which is a 22 and below, and the magnum class, which is 25 and up. But aside from that, separately, we're going to use those scores plus your GP points to add them together to have a score for the Extreme Field Target GP series, and we'll award a national champion at EBR, at the award ceremony at EBR this year. It'll be the first year. So we're learning a lot, learning how to do the points. Nothing's written in stone right now. We had to come up with something. What we came up with originally isn't perfect, but it works, and there's a lot of interest in it. I think the one in Arizona had 25 or 26 people. The one they just did the last weekend up in Oregon had 20. The one in Texas is going to have about 35, maybe even 40. And I would think the one in Utah will have quite a bit also.
Wow, that's really cool. So did you model the point system at all off of Field Target, like AFTA, AAFTA events, or is this something pretty original?
We were looking at moving in that direction. Right now, it's just if you win, you get 3 points. If you come in second, you get two. If you come in third, you get 1 point at each event, but you're limited to six. And what that does is prevents somebody that's totally, on his game from going to all of them and getting 12 points and then showing up at EBR and just being able to, you know, overhand the pellets with their hand and still win. So we're limiting the number of points you can get to six. Also, what we're doing is your first event that you shoot, you get 1 point for showing up. And then any further events, you get a half point for showing up. So you get 1 point and then a half point for the other ones if you shoot more than one. And then if you come in first, second, or third, you get 3, 2, or 1. We're looking at doing it more like AFTA, where you do it as a percentage of what the high score was. And AFTA, the regular Field Target, they got that from the pistol guys and the regular shooting guys. I forget what it's called, but Larry Piercy at AOA told me that AFTA didn't dream that up. It came from the guys that shoot competition with regular rifles and regular guns. They always take how you do as a percentage of what the high score was. And that, to me, kind of seems like the most fair. We just didn't have time to implement something like that. We got together, Robert, me, Larry Piercy, who works for Robert at AOA, and then the match directors for the four events, and kind of did a couple of Zoom calls and came up with these ideas. And so we're going to set down after EBR and kind of smooth out what now is pretty rough.
So what has been the reaction from competitive shooters that these extreme Field Target events are popping up all over the place? Because quite frankly, this is one of the coolest ideas I've heard of in the last 10 years of shooting.
I think it's super popular. I think it's really going to grow. I know a lot of the regular Field Target clubs are looking into doing the extreme Field Target. It's just, it's less rules. You know, you go to shoot a regular, and I shoot regular Field Target, so I'm definitely not putting it down because it's fun. It's a lot of fun. But you're shooting 177 guns from 10 to 55 yards. There's all these different classes and, open class, hunter Field Target class, WFTF, 12 foot pound, all that stuff. And each one has its, you can use this, but you can't use that. You can use butt hook, but you can't use this. You can dial in this class, but you can't dial your scope in that class. Extreme Field Target, it just has a couple of rules. You have to, you can shoot a gun. It can't be more than 100 foot pound. Your scope can't be more than 25, depending on the event. EBR, it's 32X. And that's about it. You know, you could show up with the gun that you take out to schwack ground squirrels at 100 yards and do pretty, if you're a good shot, you could do really good at Extreme Field Target.
Yeah, it's really cool. I just see this as a thing that's going to explode throughout America. And it's really cool, too, that we now can use our rifles untamed. And I'm sure that people in Europe will say, well, yeah, but we do it on sub 12 and all that. But as Americans, we do have the privilege of using higher power rifles. So why not? So who is orchestrating these things behind the scenes, at least getting them going and making the rules and all that kind of stuff?
It's the guys that are doing all the work are the match directors for each of the events, putting the events together and all that kind of stuff. I'm kind of Robert Buchanan. AOA is the big sponsor for this. So he's part of the, we call it the rules committee, and there are seven or eight, I think eight total guys on that are sitting down. So I'm just part of that. How I got involved with that, I'm not really sure. I had listened to talk of a GP series. I'd become pretty good friends with Robert over the last couple of years after, he formed or allowed us to form Team Center Cut. So I talked to him at least once a week, and I had heard from about, June last year or July or something, hey, we really need to get a GP series together. you know, like they do for AFTA, and we need to blah, blah, and on and on. And then I heard some of the match directors talking about it, and this went on for probably 4 or 5 months, and all I heard was, that would be really cool if. How about if? Why don't we, you know, stuff like that. And so finally, being a Navy officer, I guess, had rubbed off on me. So I kind of emailed everybody and I said, hey, let's all get together and have a Zoom call and let's talk about this and let's make it happen. So I think I was more the catalyst than anything else. It definitely wasn't my idea. The guys that came up with the extreme fuel target were Robert Buchanan and Ben Spencer in Phoenix. Those are the two guys that really brought together the concept of extreme fuel target. And then I liked it at EBR every year. That was my favorite event. And so even though I didn't do that great, so I thought, hey, I keep hearing talk about this, but nothing's happening. So let's do something about it. So that's kind of where I came in.
I'm sure a lot of these events have their own idiosyncrasies when it comes to location and stuff like that. So the question I have for you is, how are you guys performing when it comes to numbers and yourself included? Like, how is your team performing at these events and how's their experience been?
Oh, they're doing really good. I mean, if you look at Extreme, the XFT in Phoenix, Team Center Cut has won, I don't know, 5 or 6 of those events. Pacon's won. Pacon has the course record there. And Barb and Tony, even though they just started in air guns less than a year ago, Tony has won an event. Barb has come in second in 2 events. Steve Montgomery has won a couple events. He lives up in northern Arizona. I've won 1 pellet event and 3 or 4 slug events, because you can shoot pellets or slugs. And now, recently, you can also shoot rimfire as long as it's subsonic. But yeah, we've done really good. We had 2 guys that went to Oregon last weekend. I was gonna go, my car broke down North LA, so I couldn't make it. And last year I won there, and I came in second in the 100 yard. So Wayne had an extreme field target and a 100 yard event, and Team Center Cut. Steve Montgomery shot the low power class and he won the field target and the 100 yard. And then the high power class, I won the field target, and Gabe Valenzuela, who's another Team Center Cut member, won the 100 yard. So we won pretty much everything last year. So it was fun. This year, the exact opposite. We had 2 guys show up from Team Center Cut and the Wolfpack. 4 of them, Bobby, his wife Sandy, John Bagakis, and Larry Piercy, came in 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th on both events, and we didn't do anything. So just, you know, you have your day, and I learn a lot from shooters like Bobby Corcoran. There are some guys I don't look at really closely, but guys like him and like John Bagakis, if they're there and I have the time, I will watch them like a hawk, because every time I watch either of those guys, I learn something. And that's the only way you can get better.
Yeah, I was privileged enough to be able to spectate at the last EBR, and I learned a lot from a lot of these high-profile shooters. And if the audience ever has the opportunity just to spectate, you do learn a lot, and it's really fun, and I'll definitely encourage that. So the question I have for you next is, if any of these club members or clubs who want to get involved and help grow this extreme field target type event in the United States, how and in what way is it best to go about that?
Yeah, I think that the best way, you could call me or email me, or better yet, if you're looking at getting part of the Grand Prix series. Now, if you join in doing Extreme Field Target, you don't have to join the GP series. That's totally up to you. But we would like that. That would be great to have more clubs involved and more guys showing up that are shooting for the national championship at Extreme Benchrest. But I would think that advertising what it is, it's not cheap to start those targets. Are not cheap, the big ones that can withstand 100 foot-pounds, you know. But I do know that AOA, Air Guns of Arizona, is a sponsor, and they're very, Robert's very interested in growing this. So if you call AOA and talk to his general manager, Greg Lover, and say, hey, I'm interested in starting Extreme Field Target, I'm interested in having an annual event that would qualify for the Grand Prix, AOA will, I think, it's not my money, so I can't say, but I think they're very interested in assisting clubs with getting the right equipment to set up a course. Now, you don't have to have, like, Ben has a whole lot of targets because he's been doing it for a while now, and so they have set up 12 lanes, two targets per lane, you know, that's 24 targets, and then I think he has some spare targets and stuff like that, and you can change the KZ on each target to whatever size you want, anywhere from a half inch up to 3 inches, but there are targets like Ron's Club in Texas where they do the Tech Stream. He has 16 targets. So what he does is he sets up 8 lanes, 2 targets per lane, and you take 3 shots at each target. So that's a 48-shot match. Nothing wrong with that. So you don't have to have – what I'm saying is you don't have to have a whole buttload of equipment to start out doing this.
And this is the AR-500-type metal for the targets
stuff? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Stuff's very expensive, especially –
well, it's not only – exactly, prices, you know. Exactly, but it's not only that. It's those targets – we did a trial just for shits and giggles that last year, and we went and we shot the Extreme Field Target course in Arizona with our regular 20-foot-pound Hunter Field Target guns. And those targets are so good that 100 foot-pounds will knock them down, but a 20-foot-pound gun will knock them down also.
So far, what has been the best course that you've went to or best range, one that you'd like to give accolades for hosting an event that you saw as, you know, a very well done one?
Oh, the best course by far is I haven't shot at Ron's course or the one in Texas. I've shot at Wayne's course and in Oregon, which is very good. It's a good course. The one in Oregon, because of environmental reasons, they have to use spinners instead of knockdown targets. So you need a spotter. So it's a fun course, but it's flat. It is windy, and it's not easy. But where we do the Extreme Field Target course in Phoenix is in a canyon, and the wind never stays the same for more than 5 seconds. You know, you can be sitting there at a target looking at 100 yards. There are two targets that are 100 yards on that course. And you can be looking at that target and looking at the streamer on your gun, and it's going one way, and as you pull the trigger, it's going the opposite way, and you miss by 3 inches left. So it's tough. It's a really tough course. I'll give you an example. The top shooters on a 48-shot course this last year, we had a lot of good shooters. John Bagakis, Bobby Corker, and his wife Sandy, Paycon, all these shooters, the high score was 39 out of 48. That's the best. So there's a lot of room for improvement. Even guys shooting rimfire were shooting 42, 43. So it's a tough course. It's uphill most of the time. Most of the targets are uphill. And it's in a kind of a valley. The wind comes over a mountain and comes down through towards the shooting club. And it swirls and it moves. And yeah, you just, a lot of times you just got to need a little luck on your side.
It kind of reminds me of Frisbee golf.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. It's like the more difficult the course is, the more enjoyable it is. But at the same time, you're totally pulling your hair and going, how'd I do that?
Yeah. And the hard courses, I'm sorry to interrupt, the hard courses separate the best shooters. So if you shoot a course that's easy, you know, you might have, say, a 40-shot course, you might have a guy shoot 39, the next one 38, 37, 36. If you get a really hard course, the winner might shoot 39 and the next two or three might be 37 and 36, but then it just goes down from there. So the harder the course is, the more it separates the skill.
So RMAC's coming up. Let's hear about your prep for RMAC, like what you're doing. And I know that you mentioned that you like that one too. What's your favorite thing about it? So what's your favorite thing about it and how are you prepping for it?
I like RMAC. I really like my favorite event at RMAC is the speed event, because what they do is they set up, they call them squads. So they'll draw names out of a hat to put teams together, squads together. So you'll have 10 guys in your squad and they'll have 9 different lanes set up and you shoot once against each guy in your squad. So mano a mano, you know, shooters ready, stand by, go. And whoever knocks the stop plate down first, he wins that and you get points. So at the end of your 9 lanes, whoever has the most points in your squad and the number 2 guy, they go to the finals. And then on Sunday morning, you get all the guys together that have won their or came in second place in their squads, and you draw numbers and they come up with a ladder to shoot the finals, single elimination. So last year I made it to the finals and I got beat by Tom Adams. No surprise there. He whooped me pretty good. But I did make it to the finals. I was happy about that, and it was a lot of fun. And I shot my Delta Wolf in competition. It was Derek and I were shooting our Delta Wolves, and last year I think we're the only guys that I saw that shot Delta Wolves in a major competition.
Yeah, I've found it very curious that people are not jumping over to the Delta Wolf. But then I said to a friend, you know, A, it's expensive, then B, by no means is the Red Wolf antiquated.
The Red Wolf is just as good, just as accurate. The Delta Wolf has more potential. And I, up until about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I had planned on shooting my Red Wolf again because I did very well with it last year. My issue is not with the Red Wolf, it's with the ammo. The RD Monsters, the 25.4 grain RD Monsters, you know, I'll probably get struck down by JSB for this, but the quality of the ammo really isn't where it should be. And if I just pull out a tin of RD Monsters 200 pellets and I shoot it at 100 yards, I might shoot an amazing score. Or I might have a couple that just zigzag and swirl and go into the four or not even hit the target. That happens more often than you would think. And you have to go through every tin and sort them by weight and by head size. I do, by weight and by head size. That doesn't happen in 15 minutes. It takes time to do it. Every good shooter that I know that shoots 22 caliber heavy RD Monsters in competition sorts their pellets. Tom Adams won EBR last year. He sorts more than anybody I know, and he even hinted that there's something he does because he had a few videos on how he sorts, but he left the last little thing. I'm not sure what he does, but there's something that he does that he just kind of kept to himself. I don't blame him. It won him a championship. So, yeah, and so I think that I was going to use my 22 high power Red Wolf, my Delta Wolf. I got one of the first ones in, and it needed a few upgrades over the last year. The air stripper used to be a hard plastic. The new ones are metal, and they work much better. They're aluminum. The computer that, you know, the gun control unit inside there can get updated, flash BIOS updated, and mine has the latest now. And once I had that done, I didn't shoot the gun very much because I was testing out a 22 slow twist barrel for the Delta Wolf. Robert had sent it to me. A couple other shooters were testing it out because the 22 is really popular, but the 22 really, although it was accurate, it wasn't more accurate than the Red Wolf, and they were looking for something that would be more accurate with pellets. So I've been the last 4 or 5 months shooting a 22 cal experimental slow twist, 1 in 30, I think it is, or 1 in 29 twist specifically. It probably won't shoot slugs, but it shoots pellets better than my Red Wolf. And I would shoot that, but I just don't trust the ammo. And the 25, my 25 barrel is really, really good. I wouldn't call it a magic barrel, which is what I call barrels that you never sell, but it's really, really good. And I mean, I've shot over 230 quite a few times over the last 2 weeks in practicing with that gun. It's ready. It's as good as my Red Wolf HP, and it shoots 25 King heavies, and I don't get flyers. Coincidentally, I had a box of the NSA 29 grain slugs. So in the precision rifle event where you can shoot slugs or pellets, everybody that wants to do well shoots slugs because you shoot out to 200 yards. By coincidence, I just decided to try them and they shot lights out. They shot as good as the King heavies. So when I go to RMAC this year, I'm going to shoot the 25 King heavies in the speed event at the 100 yard event and the 100 yard event. And I'm going to shoot the NSA 29 grain slugs at the precision rifle event. So I'm going to do a one gun competition with RMAC this year.
So do you think slugs are going to sunset pellets? And I mean by that, take over pellets. And I know that in the next 10 years, for example, that's not going to happen, but I'm talking 10, 15, 20 years. Do you think slugs are going to dominate the field, or do you think there's always going to be a place for pellets?
It's hard to say. I think there's always going to be a place for pellets because, we'll give you an example. We shoot at my buddy Tony Pellegrino that I told you about that joined the team 6-8 months ago. But I've been shooting with him for almost 2 years now, a year and a half. He has permissions at wineries up in northern San Diego, northern eastern parts of San Diego, Ramona, and areas like that. And they have ground squirrel problems. The ground squirrels like to burrow down and eat the roots of the berries or the grapes and stuff like that, or almonds and things. So when you're out there shooting and there's things that can be damaged by a ricochet, you don't want to be shooting some slug that's going 1,000 feet per second. You want to be shooting a 22 caliber 18 grain going about 850, so that when, and they're going to kill a squirrel just as dead. You know, it only takes 5 or 6 foot-pounds to kill a squirrel if you hit him in a vital area or in the head. So shooting slugs, and we don't get any shots longer than 80 or 90 yards. So if you're shooting a regular 18 grain JSB pellet out of your Cricket Mini or your whatever gun, your Crown with the little 380 barrel on it or something like that, that's really what you want to shoot. So the fact that you can shoot a lot high power and you can shoot a lot faster and longer, it's not always necessary. And in fact, if I was up there, I brought by mistake just this last weekend, I have an Ed Gun R3, an older one, but it shoots slugs at about 1,000 feet per second. And I got a couple of crazy ricochets, and I'm glad I didn't break anything or window or something like that. So I put that away and got out the pellets. And so I think there will always be a place for pellets. But I do think slugs now can be, if you do it right, just as accurate as pellets. And I think they'll eventually overtake pellets on areas where you shoot greater than 100 yards.
So we're kind of coming to an end here. So I wanted to ask before we go, do you want to see anything changed in the industry? And it could be attitude, it could be a direction, it could be a manufacturing process. What would you like to see in the industry change, if anything?
I think the industry really has grown over the last, you know, I got into air guns in 2017, 2018, right at the boom. I mean, before that, there were air guns and accurate air guns, but it was all pellets, no slugs. And it's just over the last 4 or 5 years just really taken off. The guns improve so fast that it's hard to keep up. I think the attitude that you have to have the latest and greatest to do well, it's pushed by the manufacturers, obviously, because they want to sell guns. Nothing wrong with that. It's a business after all. They're in it to make a profit. But I can take an old 2014 Bobcat Mark II shooting 30 cal and go out and win a major tournament. So it's not really, you get to a point where it's the shooter and not the gun. And a lot of people think the opposite, and it's just not true. And I would say the biggest improvement that needs to be made is in ammo. Ammo and the manufacturers making a gun specifically to shoot slugs, not both. And right now, generally, most guns will shoot both. Guns that shoot slugs will also shoot pellets. Even barrels like the Superior Heavy in an FX gun. Tony shoots a Superior Heavy in his Crown Mark II, but he shoots the 25 heavies, and it shoots lights out. I don't even know if it shoots slugs or not. We haven't tried them. But I think that a gun specifically for slugs with an ammo made for a specific ammo or vice versa really is the next step that needs to be taken. But then, you know, a lot of guys can't afford it. Well, I'm going to buy this gun, that gun. I'm going to buy a separate $2,000 gun just to shoot slugs. Some of us can do that. I don't think most of us can.
Okay, well, I think we've come to a natural end here, so let's go ahead and end this episode. But I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the Atlas Airguns podcast. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I've learned a lot, so I think the audience will have learned a lot too. And this year at EBR, I'll probably be spectating, but I'll see you there.
Just look for the orange and black and go up and say hi to anybody.
Awesome.
Okay.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Atlas Airguns podcast. Make sure to like with a 5-star rating, share, and subscribe. Have a question? Email atlasairguns@gmail.com.